Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing, this is the show for you. It's Fight Night Extra with me, Gareth Edavis, and the one and only former world champion, Barry Jones. Today, we'll be hearing from none other than Anthony Joshua. The former two-time heavyweight champion has revealed to us that he expects his next fight to be back in the UK and even at Wembley Stadium for the first time since 2020. A huge fight this weekend in Las Vegas as well, on Cinco de Mayo weekend, as Canelo Alvarez faces off against his compatriot, the undefeated Jaime Munguia. We'll cast our eyes over that and ask what chance of a Munguia upset. Plus, we'll hear from Richard Riakpour after his rematch with Chris Billam-Smith was confirmed for the world title, of course, this time. And we'll also discuss the decision for Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul to be sanctioned as a professional bout after it was originally scheduled to be an exhibition. Lots to get through. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
Whenever they tell me there's a date, you know I'll be ready. 100%.
Okay. And it's going to be in London.
It's going to, well, that's word on the streets. That. It's going to be in London, Wembley Stadium. This is what I'm being told. So if that's what they say, they normally back their word. So yeah, let's go with that.
Plenty of options for opponents. I mean, the thought of becoming a three-time world champion is particularly appealing. Obviously, you've got Hrgović against Dubois, which could even be for the IBF strap on the 5v5. You know, if Wilder beats Zhang, he puts himself right back in the hat for an AJ fight. You've got Fury Usyk coming up, May the 8th. Honestly, anything is possible.
We have a Munguia who's an ex-world champion. We have a Munguia who's undefeated, who's young, who's hungry, who's strong, who's coming with everything. And what makes me most proud is the world will be watching, literally.
I think he's developed a lot. He's definitely a threat. He's not a walkover.
Do you believe you're going to knock him out?
Yeah, 100%.
Mr. Barry Jones, how are you, former world champion? All is well in your world?
Yeah, mate, all's good. Can't complain. All good. Busy, as you are, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been another busy weekend. I see you were up in Liverpool at the weekend. Peter McGrail, after that shock upset in the United States, getting back on track, and an interesting card. But well done, McGrail.
Yeah, it was good. Good to see him back, and it was. I think that was the perfect fight for him, just to get that confidence back after that shock defeat that he had in Phoenix in December.
Though I thought there were a couple of other notable victories on the card, and also a great debut of a guy who may be very good. Hamza Uddin looks fun to me. He's obviously a very decorated amateur and a great story. I.e., the first Bengali to really start making waves.
Yeah. Uddin looked pretty special, didn't he? Flamboyant, but also accurate with his work, power, speed, good timing. He seems to tick a lot of boxes. I always say, let's not get too carried away just yet, because it's early doors and he's young. But it's very hard not to when you see a talent of that ilk. As well as, you know, I thought Junaid Bostan did a really good job over Jack Martin. It was a tough fight to anybody, but he controlled it from the offset. And of course, Beatriz Ferreira won a world title at lightweight in what I thought was a really strong, dominant performance to just put a little bit of panic on all the other champions around in and around that weight.
I'm glad you said that about not over-egging a young fighter coming up. You know, obviously that's the job of the promoters, and you know, Matchroom do a great job of that. And Eddie's very good. Eddie Hearn's very good at broadcasting and trumpeting those young fighters. But I am pleased to see, I mean, three or four generations of British Bengalis. And you know, when you're in Bethnal Green or in the East End, I always get collared by loads of young Bengali kids. British, they're British, obviously. But originally from Bangladesh, cricket was a big thing there. But they've got that fascination with boxing now. And I think there's a lot of gyms in the area. And I do think we're going to see more of them coming through.
Well, of course, you have to. It sounds crazy, and it's not a rule. But when you see somebody the same as you, or where you're from, whether it be your ancestry or just where you live, you know, success breeds success.
Yeah,
I seen Steve Robbins lived in the same street as me, win a world title. That inspired me to want to do more. Robbie Regan, not too far, you know, up in the valleys. You see people around you. You want to be, you know, but we have a history in Wales, and they don't. So they see a good fighter do well, and especially someone like Odin, who's very flamboyant, will bring a lot of noise with him, and that would inspire a younger generation to go on and maybe get involved in the sport.
A word on Junaid Boston. I mean, I've met him inside and outside the ring around fight weeks. For me, there's something really impressive about him. You know, the intensity he has. He's got the street fighter in him for me. And do you know, he really lives the life. I met him when I was on my way up to Sheffield to a press conference one day, and he'd been out with one of the Love Islanders all night. You know, one of his mates. But he doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, enjoys himself. He's still only 21, but he's got Dalton Smith as a sparring partner up there all the time. We need a light middleweight to come through. And there's something really, I don't know, this is a kid I think may challenge for a world title one day.
Yeah, I think so. I think he has all the potential to go to the very top. And you know, and I think what he's showing now is discipline in his work. Mm. I think, you know, the fight in Phoenix, where he got tagged and struggled a little bit. He won the fight, but he had a little bit of a rocky moment. They're the moments you need in your career. They're more important than all the flamboyant, successful things you do, because you realise it is a tough sport. You have to be. To concentrate for 3 minutes is difficult. To concentrate for 3 minutes over a longer period for 12 rounds is almost impossible. So we talk about fight management all the time, and that's what it is. You can do all the good stuff, but when you start losing that concentration later in the fight, that's when you get caught and you make mistakes. And I thought on Saturday, his concentration and his discipline was fantastic.
It's been a few weeks, Barry, since we've had you on Fight Night. Would love to get your take on the Ryan Garcia Devin Haney event. It was a phenomenal night. There were many talking points. I've called it one of the biggest heists in boxing history. Reminds me of when Steve Collins said he was hypnotized to fight Chris Eubank, pulled the wool over Eubank's eyes and other people's eyes, and got the psychological advantage. What was your takeaway from it after these couple of weeks later on?
Well, it was, first of all, it was a shock. The underdog won. No, he had no right to win. There was an argument that he didn't deserve the shot of the world title, which obviously he didn't make the weight, so he didn't get that. But I mean, there was an argument. There was better fighters and more worthy fighters above him. So he was a massive underdog, and it was a huge upset. But boxing needs upsets like that. It's good for the sport. It really is, because it shows everyone, you know, on your day, you can beat anyone if you train right and you live the right life. No, he's growing up watching Mayweather, like all of his generation have, and not many people can pull it off. Where, you know, you're selling a fight not on your ability, though he can do that himself, but on your life outside the ring. Mm-hmm. And I think all the antics there, I think it's easier for him, because I think it's half truths, half made up. I think he is an unhinged character. I think he's a little bit, you know, flamboyant in how he lives his life, and not for everybody. But also, He overplayed it on purpose to make it look like he was undoing anything. He was drinking and running at 4 o'clock in the morning in his jeans and barefooted. And I think it's a little bit of both there with him. So he can get the blend right. And this is a guy who's grown up in the social media era. He has a huge following. His life is documented 24/7. So that attention that he has doesn't affect him. He lives for it. He's used to it. So I think, yeah, he played the blinder. But ultimately, all the stuff he did outside the ring is irrelevant. The performance in the ring was good enough. He was being outboxed in big stage of that fight. But when you've got speed and power, you can always get yourself out of trouble, and that's what proved the difference.
In 1980, the Four Kings emerged, Leonard, Duran, Hegler and Hearns. They had nine fights between them from 1980 to 1989. I felt that that victory for Ryan Garcia, if I'm calling them, I'm calling them the Six Princes, okay? Garcia, Devin Haney, Tank Davis, Shaka Stevenson, Teofimo Lopez, Keyshawn Davis. Those Six Princes in America right now, the fact that Ryan Garcia won at the weekend keeps all that alive. If he'd lost it, and we might get 10 fights between all of those guys all the way to 2030 now. It's very important for American boxing, that victory of his, for me, in the bigger picture as well.
Yeah, and what's important for American boxing is the more flamboyant character. For them, for their market audience, you would feel, the more flamboyant character needs to win. I think for their audience, that brings in, and for any audience, that brings in the generic sport fan. They have boxing fans. If Devin Haney wins, all the boxing fans are going to want to watch him again. But the generic sports fan, they want to see all the antics, the somersaults, all the rest, all that, the pyrotechnics, all that. They want to see that. I mean, Ryan Garcia, he is a walking circus. So the fact that he won will help that American audience grow, ironically. The technically better boxer didn't win on the night, which is Devin Haney. But the guy who can really sell the sport can move it forward, and not because of the colour of his skin, because of the way he projects his life, I would say that, and the way he acts. Them sort of things draw in an audience. They want to see you get hurt or they love you, either way.
Exactly.
The Ben Whittaker effect, we call it in the UK, you know, what he does doesn't appeal to everybody, but that's important. You need that Marmite effect to sell you to a wider audience. I think Ryan Garcia is that, and it's good for American sports, and it's good for American boxing, and that means it's good for boxing in general.
And I'd weirdly say that he doesn't even need to hold a title now to have a fight with any of those other four, if you like.
No, he doesn't. But I think for the integrity of the sport, and I say that tongue in cheek because boxing sold itself a long time ago. But for the integrity of the sport, it's important that he does make weight and he does fight for a world title. And he does call himself a world champion, because we still need that. Even though it's a loose structure, we still need that structure about, you know, there should be something more. When you were a kid, you weren't thinking about the money. You were thinking about being a champion of whatever it was, a national champion, an area champion, or a world champion. But those aspirations still have to be real and still have to be seen to kids, you know, who are watching you and looking at you as a role model.
Yeah, that is the one caveat, and I've mentioned it myself, is that he didn't make weight, and that's what you can critique him for. And I think it was a scientific gamble to come in big, come in heavy, pay the fine, the forfeiture, and say, right, I'm not once bitten, twice shy. It happened to him against Tank Davis. That's why I think we want to all see the Tank Davis now at 145 or 143. Or I'd love to see the rematch. I don't know about you.
I would, but I think it's the same result. I do. I just think stylistically, like the Tank won't mess around and box on the outside, and he's hard to hit clean. I would say about the weight, 2-3 pounds is not a big difference. If you're in the ring and someone's 2-3 pounds heavier than you, that's not a problem. It's making the weight. That sacrifice, that's what people don't understand, the people who've said it's only 3 pounds. The sacrifice to lose those 3 pounds is what empties your tank, what makes you a little bit weaker, can fight now. And if you don't make that effort, that sacrifice to do that, you're going in with an advantage that really shouldn't be allowed. That was the only issue. And it's been done through boxing history, by the way. He's not exclusively on his own here. Fighters have done it, Mayweather did it quite often. Like Juan Marquez, he didn't make the weight. You know what I mean? On purpose. Didn't need
it. He was 16 pounds heavier than him when they fought him, if you recall.
Yeah, but forget about on the night. I mean, literally making the weight. He didn't make the agreed weight. He just said, I'm going to come in and pay the fine. Not sacrificing our last few pounds, which drained your energy. That's the difference, where Haney did make the weight. And that, so, but apart from that, the performance from Ryan Garcia was fantastic, and it was a great win for him, and it was a good night of boxing.
Very quickly, a couple of things to get through in this first section as well. Some bigger cards announced in the meantime since we've seen you last, and obviously the Crawford-Medrimov fight with a big undercard in America outside those Six Princes kind of almost takes in all the big names in America. And obviously we've got Canelo this weekend that we're going to discuss, but big moves going on all the time at the moment, week by week.
It's a real statement to break into the American market and do a show on US soil, I think. And what a great fight. I think, you know, I think the the American audience won't really know who Madrimov is, but he's a really good fighter, really tough, and it's a good hard fight there for Crawford moving up into super welterweight for the first time for a title fight. But Crawford's special; he's a massive favorite, and I think it's a really good night of boxing.
Yeah, and Madrimov for me is almost the size of a middleweight, so it's almost a welterweight middleweight matchup. Hagler and Hearn, not Hagler and Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler from what was it, 1987? And you know, Sugar Ray was probably pound for pound number one at the time, and he moved up and did his number on Hagler.
Leonard had been out of the ring for a very long time. Let's not forget he retired with the eye injury. He had one comeback fight against Howard, which he didn't look very good in, and he'd been out for a few years before he came back to challenge Hagler. It was a crazy move, an unthinkable move,
but look how good he was.
He was fantastic. It was a good hard close fight, but for me that debate continues to this day. But I'm a Leonard fan, so I always think Leonard won that fight.
And I'm a Hagler fan, but I'm giving it to Leonard. No, it's fair enough. I mean, he was brilliant that night. For me as well, like you just said, I think the move by His Excellency Turki Alşaik to bring a big event to Los Angeles makes a statement with the Wembley chat, which we'll come to in a minute, Wembley Stadium chat in September. It just makes the statement that we aren't just trying to take the sport. We want to develop it and underpin it and help the sport in other territories as well. That's a clear statement of intent, isn't it, with the Los Angeles card?
Yeah, it is. Well, he's pretty much saying, like, I am a genuine boxing fan. That's what it seems like. That's what it seems like from the outside looking in. I'm a genuine boxing fan. And if you had an unlimited fund of money, what would you want to see? That's pretty much what it is. And we're going, I'd love to see Crawford against one of the best, and Madrimov is one of the best. So let's put him against him. And all the other cards we've seen, he's just going, money's not an object. Let's make the fight. I mean, it's a dream for boxing fans. I know, and people complain about, you know, but it's all in Saudi Arabia. I don't know, we can argue about this all day long. It was used to be all in Vegas or all in New York before for British boxing fans. But now it's going to be in LA, and there's going to be one in London. So, you know, we have to just be happy. What we're getting now is fantastic. And I think this is a turn in the sport that might be for the better, where the best do fight the best because money is taken out because it's guaranteed, which almost makes it like almost gives us a league for boxing, which is impossible. But the fact that people will willing to fight each other because money is not an issue anymore. If you don't fight each other, you're showing you have no appetite to want to fight the best. So boxers' pride will mean they will fight each other. And haven't we all been screaming for that forever?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're getting it now. So let's all shut up and be happy about it.
I think for us in our time in boxing, in a similar kind of era, it's unprecedented what's happening. And also, let's hope that it just does bring many, many fans either back to the sport and also creates new ones. Because when they're talking about when His Excellency went on the Reddit Sunday before last, he did a live Reddit with fans. He talked about, yes, they're going to get involved with women's boxing, which needs a little bit of help as well to grow. Yes, Canelo against Terence Crawford. Yes, David Benavidez against the winner of Better Be Evan Bivol. Just all these great fights, which kind of brings me to, you know, we're going to be hearing from Anthony Joshua after break. There is this talk about a September card at Wembley Stadium headlined by Anthony Joshua, in which I'm hearing behind the scenes that it could be so stacked, it's just going to be off the charts. So good to have AJ back on UK soil, first time since 2020.
Yeah, it is. And AJ in Wembley Stadium just seems like a natural fit, doesn't it? You know, AJ in the stadium in the UK seems like a perfect fit. He sort of like brought stadium. He made stadium boxing sexy again.
He did.
And he made it a regular occurrence for the first time in the sport. Let's be honest. Let's not forget that. So him back home is great. And the right time, after coming off that stunning knockout, you know, and forget who he was fighting, just the way it looked. The whole look of the whole thing, the way he did his job that night, just reminded people of how awesome he can be, how good he can be, and how clinical he can be as well. So yeah, in September in Wembley Stadium will be fantastic. So great.
Yesterday, of course, Barry, 7 years to the day that he fought Klitschko at Wembley, 29th of April. I mean, in that period, you mentioned Vegas and New York. We had that period from, obviously, Froch and Groves fought at Wembley Stadium, which was an anomaly in some ways, a one-off.
Yeah, yeah.
But it worked, and it kick-started that ambition. But those stadium fights Joshua had in a row, and Fury coming along and having the stadium fights as well, that's one of the reasons why I think fans were kind of reticent, first of all, to accept a new paradigm shift to events in Saudi Arabia, because we'd suddenly taken over boxing with the big stadium fights. And if you know yourself, when you speak to Americans, they were like, wow, look at you guys, look at what you're able to sell.
Yeah.
And we were being admired. It's all going to work together. Let's use Vegas, New York, the big stadiums, Cardiff, Tottenham, Wembley, and Saudi Arabia. It'll only grow from there, in my view.
Yeah, well, you know this guy, and we spoke about this before in various places about, you know, in the 70s, everyone had to go to Madison Square Gardens. It was New York. That was the place to go. I mean, so if you were a good fighter from the UK, ultimately, to fight the best, you had to go to New York, mainly. And then in the 80s, in the 90s, and 2000s, Vegas to go, because the casinos could just pay a site fee that would just blow everyone else out of the water. So the fights went there. If you were a big, a huge name, in the end, you had to go to Vegas to get the biggest fights. And now and again, you would get like Ben and Eubank back home. You would get the big domestic clashes. You get like a Hatton. You get crazy fighters like that. Carl Zaghi in the end, who would fill stadiums here. But they were few and far between, and they were periodic. So, no, what Anthony Joshua did, making stadium fights just normal, the modern boxing fan, the younger boxing fan, I should say, were spoiled. We weren't. We understood how lucky we were, and they were spoiled by it because that's all they'd known. So when it went somewhere else, they're like, hang on a minute, this is not fair. But it's coming back. That's no, listen.
Yeah, and if, it's a very good point. I think, I don't know if I'm absolutely accurate on this, but I think Lennox fought something like 9 of his last 11 world title fights in America or abroad, South Africa. And I think Karl Froch fought 11 of his 13 in that row abroad as well. And so let's not rewrite history here. People were traveling. Ricky Hatton had 7 fights in America that were really big of the last, say, 11. You know, so let's not. Amir Khan went to the States and fought there extensively.
Even big ticket sellers like Frank Bruno, you know, like he got the Witherspoon fight in Wembley, but ultimately, and he got the McCall fight at the end in Wembley. But when he had to go and box the biggest name, Mike Tyson, he had to go to the States. You have to go to America, and rightly so. That's where the money is. So you just go where the money is. Boxers will just go where the money is. That's how it is. We're a school of fish. We just go wherever the food is. We just follow wherever the food is. And the food was in America. It's in Saudi now, and it's only a 6-hour flight and 2 or 3 hour time difference. It's not the end of the world. That I think we should be happy that it's only that close. To be fair.
Well, you mentioned Mike Tyson. We'll be talking about him later in a different kind of transmogrification, fighting Jake Paul. We'll also be talking about Las Vegas this weekend, Cinco de Mayo weekend, Canelo versus Munguia. Can we see any way that Canelo is shocked on Cinco de Mayo weekend? Barry and I will talk about that shortly. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we'll discuss that Canelo and Munguia fight. We'll also hear from Richard Riakpor, who spoke to us after having his rematch with Chris Billum-Smith confirmed. Next up, though, we'll hear from none other than Anthony Joshua, who's told us his next fight will be back at Wembley later this year. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2 with me, Gareth Davis, and him, former world champion Barry Jones. Well, the former two-time heavyweight world champion Anthony Joshua spoke to TalkSport's John Jackson over the weekend in Monaco at the Formula E event and confirmed to TalkSport that he'll be back in the UK fighting at Wembley in September.
Wembley Stadium, this is what I'm being told. So if that's what they say, they normally back their word. So yeah, let's go with that. Wembley, September the 20th or 21st, 22nd, sometime in there.
Book that week off. If book you're going to come into Wembley off. Stadium, exactly. Be in the North London area between those days.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about names in the frame, we spoke a little bit earlier on the Formula E stage. Three names in the frame.
So what they've got on June the 1st, in Saudi Arabia, they've got the 5 versus 5 card. We've got Filip Hrgović versus Daniel Dubois. You've got Zhang Zili versus Deontay Wilder. So providing one of those look good, the one who looks the best, His Excellency Turki Alşekir is saying, I want you to fight, because what he says is that in the future, I want people to look back at your record and say you took on the best. I said, now you're speaking my language. So out of that pool, I believe that's who I'm going to be fighting.
That sounds like a really beautiful relationship you've got there with him.
Yeah,
you're on the same page.
Exactly. We're on the same page, and he's on the same page as the fans as well. Do you know what I'm saying? So he's trying to deliver what the fans want. I know they want that big fight with Tyson Fury, and he's working on it. Fury's got his obligations with Usyk, so I've got to make sure I stay focused and disciplined, make sure I keep on steamrolling through opponents so I can get closer and closer to have an opportunity to fight for the fans and fight for myself, me versus Tyson Fury, and hopefully it'll be in London as well.
Great to hear, and very jubilant there as well. Very, very upbeat. This is a Anthony Joshua with momentum, with self-belief, training very hard, I'm told. And also, by the way, no doubt ready to step in if something happens to Fury and Usyk for May the 18th. Because I understand that if something goes wrong with those two, it's AJ. So he's saying it could be any one of the winners of Wilder Zhang, that's Deontay Wilder and Zhili Zhang, or Daniel Dubois and Filip Hrgović, obviously part of the 5v5 Eddie Hearn, Frank Warren, Matchroom, Queensbury fights. For me, and this is just my opinion and what I've heard behind the scenes, they're very much targeting the winner of Filip Hrgović and Daniel Dubois, because the mandatory or even the IBF belt might be on the line at that point.
Yeah, and he wants to be a world champion again, a three-time world champion, and of course, and you would take that fight. And I think that's a winnable fight for him as well. Let's not forget that. I do think that. I think, Dubois, that would be an interesting fight. Dubois is coming off a good win against Gerald Miller, but still think that Joshua could have the firepower to break his heart again. And I think Hrgović, who's a real talent, does fight at one pace. So I think, and Josh has shown that he can mix the paces. So, but we still want to see the Wilder fight. That's the fight we've wanted to see for such a long time. And Wilder needs to show us something more than he did against Joe Parker, of course. And Zhang might be, Zhang's funny, see, because Zhang is like the perfect opponent of the box and the worst opponent of the box. Yeah. All in one package. He really is.
For 6 rounds, he's the worst to box, it looks like.
Well, I think, for 20 seconds of every round, he's the worst to get in the air. He's horrific, but he has no sustainability in any round to throw more than 15 punches.
But he's 40 and 21 stone.
But when every time he hit Joe Parker, it was fantastic. But every time he hit Joe Parker, he hurt him. But what if you can't break the heart, which he couldn't with Joe Parker? Then you get outboxed all the time. And I think with Joshua now, with Joshua's power as well, Zhang might walk on the shot. So it's interesting to see how that plays out. But I do think, I do agree with you. I think ultimately, if given the choice, he'll go for that world title shot. Anthony Joshua, you really will.
See, the way I see it playing out is, obviously it's all dependent on what happens on May the 18th when Fury and Usyk fight for the undisputed title. I think it's going to be a really close, cagey chess match. Yeah. That would not surprise me if it's a split draw, majority draw, a controversial decision that half the people, Usyk fans, think he's stolen enough rounds, 7-5, or the Fury fans think he's stolen enough rounds, and they'll need to do it again. And it'll probably be in a really big event close to the opening of the Riyadh season again in October or November. If that happens, I can see Joshua having the Filip Hrgović fight in the winter or in the late summer, or the Dubois fight. Both of those work at Wembley, I think, as a big event. Yeah. So that gets you 60,000. Then you think of the undercard that you might put together. They can put whoever they want there. They can do a 5v5. They can put Wardley and Clark on there in a rematch if they really want to buy that. They can put Ben and Eubank on there if they really want to and find a way around licensing. They can put an enormous card together that will sell. It will simply sell. We might even have a Taylor Catterall rematch on there at that point. If that's a brilliant second fight, they might have the trilogy. There's so many options now. We used to talk about these things in dreamland, and now they're possible. So if Joshua fights in September and, say, beats Filip Hrgović, and Fury and Usyk do box again in November, and they complete the two chapters, Joshua's going to need an opponent for a little bit later in the year. And then I think that's where Wilder comes in if he's beaten Zhang, in my view. I think that's how it plays out. And then we get Fury or Usyk and Joshua in probably, I don't know, February next year.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see. I think the data show it means that everyone's boxing regular. And I think that's another thing that we have to be happy for about the Saudi Arabian involvement is that people, these bigger names, so certainly in the heavyweight division, are boxing regular. So that, and that's important. And Joseph Parker have shown when you're busy, how much better you are. Okay. It shortens your lifespan in the sport, but you're boxing regular, you're going to earn bigger money and get out quicker when you're younger and fresher. Let's look at it that way. And so I do think that boxing regular is better for the sport because then you get the fights made quicker. There's no hold up. I'm not a fan of rematch clauses because they do hold up, especially for title fights, because they guaranteed rematch clauses hold up other people's opportunities to box for the title, holds up careers all the way down the line. So I think if Fury and Usyk's a one-sided fight, I think that there's enough influence there to say,
step aside.
We're not going to see the rematch. There's no need to see it. It was one-sided. So we don't want to see that. No, we've seen it with Wilder and Fury. But it turned out to be the third fight was the best of the lot. But we didn't want to see it after the second fight, which was a beating for Wilder against Tyson Fury. But it's great to see all these fights in the mix. And by the way, Joshua sells out Wembley now, whoever he fights. He always did. Yeah. And there was a lull where maybe he wouldn't have done that maybe 18 months ago, a year ago. But now I think he's back. The public love him again. And I think, if he gets a good win in September, I think whoever he fights, and any of those names you mentioned, they don't need a stacked undercard to sell it. He will sell it. But a stacked undercard is for us, Gareth. It's for us. It's for us to go crazy about and they'll be all geeky about who's fighting who and what a great night it's going to be. It's a magical time. It really is.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, as you rightly mentioned there, that he sells out Wembley. His last two fights were at the O2, which is a sign of him having to rebuild. It's a year ago that he fought, was it Franklin at the O2? And then he fought Hellenius at the O2. And they weren't big events. And there was kind of great speculation around where he was mentally. But as you say, you rightly mentioned Joseph Parker. And obviously, there was that brilliant call out the other day from Joseph Parker to Dillian White. Again, there's a fight that works on an undercard at Wembley or over in Saudi or as a standalone on its own that could go to the O2 again. I think Joseph Parker's in a different place. Like you say, that victory in March, it was December, wasn't it, when he fought Wilder. Five fights in 13 months or whatever it was, 15 months. Great momentum. Same as Joshua, four wins in 11 months. Brilliant for him. And onwards and upwards, because when the heavyweight division's strong, which it is now, and it's great to see Andy Ruiz back, which we didn't mention, against Big Baby Miller, when we know who the top 20 heavyweights are in the world, and everyone's discussing who they are, and you can take the top four away, which is probably Fury, Usyk, Joshua, Parker at the moment, take the other 16, pull out eight fights, any of them can fight any of them. Frank Sanchez, for me, is a dark horse in the division as well. He could be one of the next rising stars. It might be Filip Hrgović. It might be Jared Anderson. But at least we know, and the general public are getting to know now, who the top 20 heavyweights are in the world. And when heavyweight boxing's strong, it all filters down for me.
It does, mate. We need it. That's the flag bearer for our sport, the heavyweight division. So when that's thriving, when that's busy, when that's successful, then it helps every fight. It helps every weight division, of course. And let's not forget Jalilov. When Jalilov wins his gold medal in Paris this year, which I'm pretty sure he will,
Are you going, by the way?
I don't think I am, either.
You're not sitting in a dark room commentating for four and a half weeks, because that's one of the hardest jobs in boxing.
But you get to watch the fights, and that's
you
all.
Do.
Yeah, so you enjoyed that in that respect. But, you know, Jalilov's going to be a real threat. He's already had a few pro fights. He looked good as a pro already, so he's going back to the amateurs. He's going to win a medical medal, you would feel. And he'll be a player in that division within 3-4 months. I guarantee it. Look, what we're seeing now is people are eliminating each other to get the shot, to get to the shot to the top, but they're not being chucked in the bin. They're getting an opportunity to fight again, and I think that's important. And that helps the division. You just keep not recycling like they used to, but you keep fighting competitive fights, moving up the ladder, and that's what boxing should be. And then you get the chance to box the top guy. Parker versus Anthony Joshua wasn't a great fight the first time round, but that whets the appetite now. I think that would be a much better fight this time round, in a rematch for those two.
Yeah, we have a referee who lets them fight each other because referee barely let them compete. It was a very strange night. Great stuff, Barry. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Next up, we'll look ahead to this weekend's clash in Las Vegas as Saul Canelo Alvarez fights Jaime Munguia.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. I'm Gareth Davis, and I'm here today with former world champion Barry Jones. Now, this weekend, bit of a Mexican takeover in Las Vegas. Cinco de Mayo weekend, traditionally one of the big pay-per-view weekends inhabited in the past by the likes of Floyd Mayweather, Oscar De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao and others, because there are so many Mexicans who love a big fight night. Well, this is a big one. It's a fascinating one, Barry. They're both big draws in Mexico, but I would like to say that Munguia's gone under the radar a little bit. He's very heavy-handed. British fans will remember him from his victories over Liam Smith and John Ryder in particular. He's moved up the weight divisions from light middle to super middle very strongly, very powerfully, undefeated in over 40 fights. The one thing about him I've always known, which is something I knew about him early, he's not a big seller of himself, but you can prod and poke him and he will talk to you. His English isn't amazing, but his dad was a heavyweight, amateur. And I've always thought that about him. He fights like a big boned man. Like he knows he's got like a heavy, everything he does is heavy. And I think he's a great boxer. And this could be his moment to shine. And this needs to be his moment to shine. But it's fascinating that when you look at his DNA, that the dad's a heavyweight, that kind of means something, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does, yeah. And time is everything in the sport. And it might, I think that's where the intrigue lies here. It might just be that he's on the ascendant and Canelo is, I'm not saying he's declined, but he might just be, you know, a little bit stagnant maybe, where I don't think he gets any better, and he might be on the tip of the mountain when he's starting to go downhill a little bit. And you see that with the output. Canelo used to, you know, Mexicans traditionally beat you on volume and power.
And on the inside as well. They go on the inside, don't they? Yeah.
And everything. But I mean, but they're volume punchers as well. They're very busy fighters. They're very fit, very busy fighters. Even the big punchers are. But he hasn't been of late. He hasn't been throwing Bristol combinations. He hasn't had to do what he did against Golovkin in one and two. Certainly one, where he had to throw lots of punches back. He bullies you with the front foot, with the pressure, and then hits you with single shots, but they're heavy and they're hard, and he beats you up. Munguia is sort of the wrong... Benavidez is the real wrong style for him. That's why he's not going to fight him. But Munguia is also a busy fighter who's heavy-handed, but is hittable. But I thought Munguia against John Ryder was the best Munguia we've seen. I thought he was more focused, more structured, more patient with his work. Even though he was busy, he wasn't rushing in with his work. He wasn't falling to his shots as he has in the past. Like Devrinchenko, when he boxed Devrinchenko in the fight before John Ryder, it's a great fight to watch, fantastic fight to watch for the fans, but he was too hittable. And that guy against Canelo Alvarez gets beat quite badly, I feel. But the one we've seen against
fight John of the Ryder, year, that was one of the fights of the year for me, oh, by the way, as well.
Fight. It was a great fight. But I mean,
his 11th round and 12th rounds in that fight were just extraordinary.
He got a great engine and he's busy and he punches hard. But I think he showed a bit more patience against John Ryder.
Yeah.
And also, we have a marker there with what Canelo did to John Ryder and what Munguia did to John Ryder. They're two different things there, mate. That's night and day in performances. And so, you know, is the time right for Canelo to be taken off that perch? Who knows? But I'll tell you one thing, though. Munguia sells. I was in Phoenix for John Ryder in January. And it was packed out and they were loud. And he has real fans in that part of the world. So, you know, for Canelo in Vegas, it's always Canelo and no one else can get a ticket. No other fans get a ticket unless you're a Canelo fan. But come Saturday night, Sunday morning for us, that might not be the case. It'll be a pro Canelo crowd, but there's going to be a sizable amount of Munguia fans there.
I disagree with you on a couple of things. I do think, because of this new
rock, so that's okay.
Well, and I just think that I know that this tease is going on that we might get David Benavidez. We all want to see David Benavidez against Saul Canelo because he's the ultimate test at 12 stone. And he's a big guy, Benavidez, and he's direct and he's aggressive and he's looked amazing so far in his career. Even though you can pick a couple of little holes in him, but I think we will get that fight because I think the Saudi Arabians will end up putting so much on the table in the end to make. And also, if Benavidez fights Beterbiev first, let's say, that'll take something out of him. Because I think Beterbiev and Benavidez is an incredible fight to have. Because Benavidez is one of those big super middles as well, isn't he? 6'1", very powerful. And we've got to remember with Canelo, he's a middleweight. At the end of the day, naturally a middleweight, and he's fighting kind of above himself in lots of ways. He's taken it four weight divisions. I remember his debut in Vegas when he fought Cotto's cousin, Cotto's brother, actually, I think. And I went to watch it, and I remember the great Don Chargan, who's passed now, who spotted Canelo for Oscar De La Hoya from that arcing body shot that he showed when he was like a 14-year-old kid and said to Oscar, "You got to sign him." And he got hit by about 12 right crosses in the opening round by Cotto. Don Chargan said, "Go and watch him." There was a man and his dog in there in the MGM Grand at the time in the arena. And I thought, well, what's he on about? He keeps getting hit, but he came back, and he was a welterweight then. He was a little ginger kid as a welterweight. I think he was 19 at the time. And obviously, I was at the Mayweather fight, and we've seen him progress. I think we sometimes forget how great he's been as well.
He's been phenomenal. Like I always say about Canelo, he's been one of the most impressively evolving fighters we've had in the history of the sport. I'm not saying he's the greatest of all time, but evolving fighters. He takes a lesson from every fight and puts it into the next fight. He stopped doing that When he unified the super middleweight division in lockdown in the pandemic.
Four fights in 9 months, wasn't it?
Yeah, it took me like 11 months to get him all, to get it all, didn't it? I think he had a voluntary in between that. I think that's tremendous. But I mean, he stopped evolving then. He just stuck to what he just thought. I could bully everyone now. The Benavidez fight won't happen. I don't feel that, and I hope it does, because Benavidez is now a light heavyweight. Canelo's light heavyweight experiment failed, I think. And even though he beat Kovalev...
He's not big enough. That was a faded Kovalev, and against a very strong, clever boxer at light heavyweight, which Bivol is, and it might even take him to beat Beterbiev. We don't know yet that skill he's got.
Yeah, sure.
Weight divisions for a reason. That's simple as that. He just went too far.
I agree with you. He's been great. And even if he doesn't box Benavidez, I can't see how it tarnishes his legacy of being an all-time great fighter. What he's done, who he's boxed. Those two Golovkin fights alone, they were brilliant. I was ringside for both of those.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
they were a privilege. They were absolutely awesome. They really were. And the man he takes a good shot, beautiful skills, and has a great chin. So he ticks all the boxes to beat anybody on his day. But is his day past him? That's the only question.
I just feel that Jaime Munguia may be made for him. We don't know. We'll be watching on Saturday night, Canelo versus Munguia this weekend from Las Vegas. Massive Cinco de Mayo weekend event. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Next up, in the final section, we'll hear from Richard Riakpor, and we'll talk Mike Tyson against Jake Paul after it was confirmed that their mega fight, if I can call it that, on Netflix in July will be sanctioned as a professional bout.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the iconic O2 Arena here in London, England, two young, undefeated fighters going head-to-head.
He's just beginning to come apart a little bit here. Willem Smith, he's looking for the uppercut there, Riakpor. And the left hand, Willem Smith just covering up, trying to grab hold.
A fight that everyone's been calling for, but now we've got it on and I'm so excited.
Massive right hand there from Riakpor and Willem Smith. Well, how he stayed up from that, I do not know.
You have improved, listen. But not as much as I have, that's what I said.
No. You're deluded.
And still, the WBA Intercontinental Cruiserweight Champion, Richard Riakpor.
Right on cue, Richard Riakpor delivers.
Oh, good up and
lovely uppercut again there from Willem Smith. Nice left hand as well.
Oh, big shot.
Feels a huge uppercut.
I'll be still champion after the fight, but the respect will be there, I'm sure.
I'm going to emotionlessly battle you on the 15th of June. The midnight train is going to prevail.
You're listening to Fight Night Extra with me, Gareth Davis, and him, former world champion Barry Jones. Finally today, we're going to discuss Richard Riakpor challenging Chris Willem Smith for the world cruiserweight crown. Obviously, they fought 5 years ago. Richard Riakpor won a very close decision on the night. They both evolved. They both come on. They're great, both great characters now, and they're going to meet at Selhurst Park on June the 15th. We are hoping to be there for TalkSport, of course, on the night. Here's what Richard Riakpor told me on Saturday night.
I think he's developed a lot. He's definitely a threat. He's not a walkover. And I feel because he's become a world champion now, he has probably developed a world championship mindset, which that's going to be something to overcome as well. And he's been in tough fights that haven't been going his way, but he's found a way to win. So that's going to be another challenge in itself. So there's a few challenges there for sure.
No, absolutely. I agree. I mean, it's 5 years ago that you guys fought. That's a long time ago in your careers, obviously, Richard. And I think, to be fair to Chris, he produced a great performance against Lawrence Okolie. And again, when we were there, against Mateusz Mastrzyniak in a fight that wasn't going all his own way. And I imagine you just want to really take him into deep waters, and we know how much you've improved with your patience and your repertoire in terms of your boxing skills now.
Yeah, I've improved a lot. I've improved. I started to understand the game. I started to actually watch boxing. And that was influenced by my coach as well. And I've kind of desired a deeper meaning of the fight game and, you know, everything that surrounds it and stuff. So it's made me like study the sport more, and that's definitely added to my game. So yeah, it's fun, and I think being a boxer is a great thing. It's something that I've always dreamed of, and just competing in front of the masses, in front of people all over the world. So it's I'm really happy right now.
Do you believe you're going to knock him out?
Yeah, 100%.
I still have Richard Riakpor as a marginal favourite in this fight because he's got that equalising power. How do you see this?
Yeah, I sort of go the other way. It's a good, hard, close fight, but I think they're both better now. They both understand who they are. I think that's the difference between when they boxed the first time. Now, I think Riakpor understands his judgment of the distance better now. You know, he has that power, but sometimes he would throw over the top of the head. He just swing his body into the shot and he punched too long at times and then gets smothered. Now he's starting to know his range. And for me, for Chris Billen Smith, you know, fantastic engine. Knows he can take a shot, but knows he doesn't have to now all the time. He doesn't have to wall through punches. He's a smarter fighter than he used to be. And his fight management is much far better than it was when those two boxed the first time. So I would edge Chris Billen Smith because he has that experience at a higher level to cope with the pressure. And this will be a massive pressure for him, for both of them. For Riakpor, no, you sometimes rather be Riakpor in this fight because it's his first shot. You just go, you'll give everything into it where Billen Smith might feel there's bigger fights out there for him, maybe. You know, once you win a title, your attitude changes. You're the king of the world. You might have other aspirations, but everyone around you is beneath you. You might not feel like that. Some fighters do when they win it. They just feel superior, and so you should. And he still needs that hunger, and this fight, he knows there's a danger in this fight. He knows Richard can punch. He knows he can punch. So listen, their fight was close. The knockdown, which was a very contentious knockdown, you know, was he knocked down into the ropes and it kept him up, or was he just pushed? It was hard to tell. The referee made a split decision. So, but that was the deciding factor to win that fight. So, you know, so, but I think Billen Smith might just get over the line, but I wouldn't bet my house on it.
Well, what there is in this, and it's fascinating, and a bit of history here, that it's happening at Selhurst Park, the home of Crystal Palace Football Club. That's brilliant. Len Harvey, late 40s, early 50s, former light heavyweight world champion from the UK. Big, big name. Fought there as well in the 50s. There hasn't been a fight there for 70 years. So which is great for Crystal Palace and Selhurst Park. Riakpor's being paraded, I think, with Billen Smith on the pitch when Crystal Palace play Manchester United next Monday. That's all really good because when the football fans see that, you'll get probably 10,000 of them, of the fans from the club, wanting to go anyway. He's from that area. You've got Isaac Chamberlain against Michael Sislak for the European title on there. Isaac's a Brixton boy. So it's really, really good for South London. I think the ground takes 25,000. If they've got the pitch set up as well, you're probably looking at 28. If they get 20,000 in there, outdoors, balmy, mid-June night, I think it's going to be phenomenal, you know.
Yeah, the thing about I think it will be a really good night, and I think I'm definitely going to go. I think it's the thing about being football grounds and football fans, you have to be a real fan. I'm sure we know Chris Billen Smith is, but you can't fake it. So that they will follow those football fans, they'll follow you if they know you're a real fan, not just from the area or from the city and wear a top now and again. And we've seen that time and time again. Fighters who try to make out their football fans, their local club, and don't sell to the ones who genuinely are, like Chris Billen Smith and Josh Warrington, who do sell out. It's a different feel. I've been following Cardiff City most of my life, so I could have sold Cardiff City. And so Joe Cordina could as well, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But other fighters who just live in that city didn't follow the club. It doesn't work. They've tried it and it's failed. So let's hope he is a proper... Let's hope the fans realise Riakpor is, if he is, a genuine fan. Because I know Bournemouth will travel. Football fans love an away trip more than a home trip. So, yeah. So once they're in, they're in. And now they're in with Billham Smith. And the chance to go to Sellers Park, to go to Crystal Palace, to go to London, it's not too far away for them. And he's going to put on I sat with him the other week. He's going to put on coaches. He's got his own pocket to get the fans up there. He'll take a few thousand himself. And that'll be enough to make it a really good atmosphere.
Yeah, it'll be phenomenal. Really looking forward to that night. But again, it's great to see, you know, I think June the 8th is a bit of a pause, but there's so many busy weekends on the boxing calendar right now. And it is amazing to see. And it is great to, and a little shout out to Boxer here and Ben Shalom. He's got hammered a little bit of late by Eddie Hearn and others. But it's great to see them still working away. It's a good card. I mean, I've been at those Boxer cards recently. I think there's a lot to praise. I mean, the Fabio Wardley, Fraser Clark worked brilliantly at the O2 a couple of weekends ago. It was brilliant to be at that. It was a phenomenal card. You know, you mentioned Ben Whitaker earlier. You know, let's not forget that they're working away behind the scenes as well while all this great investment is going on from Saudi Arabia at the moment.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's, as much as the big fights, you know, keep the sport alive, let's not forget the grassroots level as well. I know boxing are grassroots because they've got Sky Sports, which is a massive driver for boxing. It has been since I was boxing. But so, you know, that's important to keep those big fights there, but also to keep developing the talent and to keep building a fan base at home. That's
it's important. It's a conveyor belt, isn't it? We need that conveyor belt moving up on a kind of graduated climb.
And that's why this year is so important, because it's an Olympic year where we have to have the Ben Whitakers. We have to have the fighters who win Olympic medals, because they bring in a new fan base. They bring in people who don't watch boxing but turn over because it's the Olympic Games and just go, oh, and that's very much about storylines. Oh, I like that story. Look at Amir Khan, 17 years of age, wins a silver medal. Didn't get a gold, wins a silver medal. But no, for 70, on his own. The boxer we took, the GB boxer took.
Yeah.
And everyone fell in love with him
because
of that. And don't forget about where his background is. Just because he's a 17-year-old kid. Look what he did. And then he turns pro as a star, and there's a new audience to watch him. And that'll happen this year. Hopefully we get some medals in the Olympics for that. But also with Boxer and all the other promotion companies building fights and good undercards as well on the builds of things like Billy Smith and Riakpor, it's important to find that next star, the next hidden gem.
Finally, Barry, just finishing off today's show, quick chat on Jake Paul, or Mike Tyson against Jake Paul, obviously in America later this summer. Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor added to that card, which gives it a bit of oomph, gives it a bit of credibility, if you like. But how are we feeling about the fact it's been sanctioned as a proper bout?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. Got to be honest. I'm more not a fan of it. I think it's crazy. It's just ridiculous. Not Jake Paul.
Eight twos.
Yeah, but we just make up your own rules. 8-2s, 14 ounce gloves. You know, what are they going to wear? Those stupid inflatable fat suits so they don't get hurt. Where does it end? No, but you can't. You can do what you want outside of this jurisdiction of a governing body. You can do what you want. You can have them on ice skates boxing. I don't know. They can do what they want. And fight on a ski slope. Who cares? I mean, good luck to you. You want to make money? Make money. But once it becomes real boxing, which Jake Paul is a real boxer now because he has a license and he's boxed a real professional boxer. Make it that or what you will, but he has. But Mike Tyson's an old man. Like I'm an old man. Like you're an old man. You know, we think we're young, but that's the truth of it.
Yeah.
He's far older than me and in worse condition than I am because of all the hard fights he's had and the life he's lived outside of boxing as well. It hasn't been stellar. He might be in shape now. In shape for his age, though. No,
we see those little clips where he looks magnificent sprinting or throwing them. They're 5-second clips.
But he might be, listen, Gareth, I can punch the bag. I don't go to boxing gym. I could go to the boxing gym now and I could punch the bag for 5 rounds.
And look like a world champion, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I look half decent at best. But what I'm saying is, even if you are looking good and sharp, taking punches is dangerous. Taking punches in your later life
is really catastrophically
dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to do it? Why would you want to do it?
Well, he's doing it to make money, presumably.
But you could die. I mean, it's a risk anyway that we all take, you know, a risk that we don't think about. But it's a dangerous sport, but you're protected by your youth, you know, your experience, your ability, and also medicals and governing bodies who should be caring about fighters. That's the truth. But when you've got an old man boxing a young man, even though the young man has no talent, real talent for boxing, you know, he's a talented guy, of course, against a guy who was an all-time great. Let's not forget, you know, Tyson's last fight, not the Roy Jones thing, Tyson's genuinely last fight.
3 years ago.
He looked awful.
He did. And he said then, didn't he, I'd never want to be in the ring again, didn't he?
I don't know when that was, 15 years ago, maybe, something like that. He was too old then, maybe longer.
I think it's 19 years ago, isn't it?
Well, there you go. I just took off the top of my head guessing. But either way, he was awful then, and he was awful a long time before that. So it's just, it's not I want to see, because something bad could happen. And who wants to see that? No, for the sake of money? I mean, I'm only moaning about it now because someone sanctioned it. They were always sanctioned it. It's white-collar boxing. They can do what they want to do. But no, they can't. They have to make, if it's real, it's real. And that puts a danger to it. That's the sport doesn't need. If something bad happens, we all suffer for that. We all feel it. And also, I don't know. I don't see it. I'm hoping it's choreographed and they all have a good time. I'm hoping that. I really am. But Mike Tyson, I can't see him on the whole back when he's throwing. But listen, Tyson could knock him out, by the way. I'm not saying he can't.
I know. I kind of want that to happen.
I don't. I got nothing against Jake Paul. Good luck to him. But I mean, it's just, this shouldn't be it shouldn't be a sanctioned fight. It should be what it is. Yeah. It should be what it is. But but Katie Taylor on the bill against Manon Serrano is a fantastic fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a big event at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. It will.
I want to finish on a negative. Sorry.
I know, no, but it's fine. It's very hard to disagree with a lot of the points you make there. Anyway, Barry, it's great to see you as always. Thank you so much for your input on today's Fight Night Extra. You've been listening to Fight Night Extra with my guest Barry Jones and myself, Gareth and Avis. We'll see you next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.